This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. This is a story of a grand discovery cloaked in a small, unassuming form, much like the little blowsand-loving plant Draba that Aldo Leopold wrote about in the Sand County Almanac. This is about a small, worm-eating snake called the lined snake, which had never before been found in Wisconsin, until Corey Raymond, in September of 2011, decided to go out to explore. He wanted to find late summer prairie plants and had hopes of seeing an upland sandpiper before they migrated back to Argentina. Instead, like so many adventures, big or small, surprises ensued. And this brings to mind the saying of Louis Pasteur, who said, "In the fields of observation, chance favors only the prepared mind." This defines Corey in a nutshell. Corey studied wildlife ecology at UW-Madison and worked in the field studying plants and wildlife in six states for several universities and the Wisconsin DNR. He taught high school biology for around 8 years in Sparta. He and his wife and two young children now live in Viroqua. Corey, along with Jeffrey Lorch, a microbiologist at the National Wildlife Health Center in Madison, have written a fascinating chapter about the lined snake in the wonderful new book, Amphibians and Reptiles of Wisconsin, edited by Joshua Kapfer, K-A-P-F-E-R, and Donald Brown, and published by the University of Wisconsin Press in 2022. I'll tell you a little bit about Jeff Lorch, and then about the book they have contributed to, and then the story about how Corey happened to find a snake unknown in our state of Wisconsin. Jeff Lorch has had a lifelong interest in amphibians and reptiles, conducting field survey work and contributing to several projects related to their conservation. He holds a PhD in molecular and environmental toxicology, and has dual Bachelor of Science degrees in microbiology and wildlife ecology from the UW-Madison. He currently works at the U.S. Geological Service National Wildlife Health Center in Madison, where he investigates and studies emerging wildlife diseases with a special interest in diseases that affect amphibian and reptile populations. And about this new book, Amphibians and Reptiles of Wisconsin. It's a big book, not one you'd want to carry out in the field. It's meant to be a comprehensive reference to our amphibians and reptiles, and it is a delight to read. Each chapter starts with a general overview called At a Glance, which is easy to read and gives a lot of information, followed by detailed life history parts in each chapter. I'll read from the back cover. Amphibians and reptiles represent an essential and interesting component of Wisconsin's wildlife. 18 species of amphibian and 36 species of reptile occupy landscapes across the state. They live in aquatic habitats that range from small streams to large lakes and from open prairies to mature forests on land. These species are vital members of the biological communities in which they occur, acting as important predators, prey, and competitors, while also providing a wide variety of additional ecological functions. However, many amphibians and reptiles have experienced drastic population declines and even local extinctions in Wisconsin due to habitat loss and degradation, overharvesting, the introduction of invasive species, pollution, and other factors. This comprehensive volume, by an expert team of editors and contributors, consolidates the current state of scientific knowledge, aims to expand public knowledge and appreciation of Wisconsin's natural legacy, and brings out the herpetologist in all of us. This long-awaited state-of-the-field synthesis also includes hundreds of color photographs and illustrations, state-level and North American range maps, dichotomous keys, and research and conservation anecdotes that will entertain and inform even the most dedicated nature lover. Amphibians and Reptiles of Wisconsin is set to become a lasting resource and armchair companion for anyone in the Midwest interested in the state's natural history and amphibian and reptile fauna. I counted up the number of contributors who wrote the chapters in this book, and they're around 50. So now, without further ado, here is part of the chapter on the line snake called Natural History Box by Corey Raymond, and then I'll read the Natural History Box by Jeffrey Lorch about the favorite food of this little snake, earthworms, and their history here in the Driftless area. This is on page 670, An Unusual Discovery. On a September day in 2011, I set out to explore a prairie in Iowa County that I had not previously visited. I was hoping to see blooming wildflowers and perhaps catch a glimpse of the upland sandpiper before its long autumn migration to Argentina. It had rained the previous day, which brought with it a cold front. The air was cool and the sky was overcast, not the best weather for observing reptiles. On some of the hillsides, the bedrock was close to the surface, and I observed many plant species indicative of a remnant prairie, suggesting the site had escaped the plow. Despite the cool temperatures, I thought I would try my luck in looking for snakes. Perhaps I would be fortunate enough to find something unusual, such as a plains garter snake. I lifted and peered under some of the rocks lying on the surface of the hillside, carefully replacing them to their original positions afterward, and within around 15 minutes I had found a small garter snake. I crouched down to take a photo, but as I examined the animal more closely, I realized that something seemed unusual about it. The head was too small for a plains garter snake, and the coloration was too dull. Suddenly, I realized it looked kind of like a line snake. I had read about this species and seen pictures of it, but had never seen one in person. Astonished, I picked up the snake and turned it over, which exposed the rows of black half-moon-shaped spots on the ventral surface and confirmed the identification. Not only was this a species I had never seen before, but it was apparently the first time one had ever been found in Wisconsin. The find was unexpected for several reasons. First, it was in Iowa County and not particularly close to the Illinois or Iowa border. It seemed to represent a population disjunct from other known line snake sites in neighboring states. Second, this was likely a native relict population that had somehow gone undetected for hundreds of years. In contrast, most new vertebrate species discovered in Wisconsin are the result of an introduction or recent range expansion. Third, of all the amphibian and reptile species found in adjacent states, but not in Wisconsin, that were on the radar, the line snake was low on the list. Many others, such as the Kirtland snake, Plains hognose snake, Graham's crayfish snake, smooth earth snake, Fowler's toad, and Plains leopard frog, seemed like more plausible candidates to be discovered in the state. This experience is testament to the point that there are still great discoveries to be made in Wisconsin by enthusiastic naturalists. And that's Corey's Natural History Box, part of their chapter. And now Jeffrey Lorch writing about earthworms. Earthworms are abundant throughout much of Wisconsin and provide an important food source for a variety of wildlife. However, the earthworms most frequently encountered in the state are invasive and were introduced from elsewhere. While some species of native earthworms occur in North America, it's thought that the last glaciation caused the extirpation of native earthworms from Wisconsin around 11,000 years ago. These extirpated natives were slow to recolonize by natural dispersal and may not have been present by the time the first Europeans reached the state. Yet some of our native snake species, such as the lined snake, Butler's garter snake, common garter snake, Decay's brown snake, and western worm snake, are decidedly vermivorous, worm-eating. How is this possible? One explanation is that the diets of these snake species shifted once earthworms were introduced. Although garter snakes and Decay's brown snakes primarily feed on earthworms, they also take other prey items, and the large number of earthworms in their diet may simply reflect availability, i.e. earthworms are more abundant than other prey. However, the lion snake and western worm snake are currently considered to be obligate vermivores, and the explanation of greater prey availability does not adequately explain their diet. A second possible explanation is that some species of native earthworms persisted in portions of the driftless area that did not experience permafrost during the last glaciation. This could explain why the lion snake and western worm snake are currently limited to this region of the state. We very rarely see earthworms in remnant prairies in southwestern Wisconsin, and have never observed any at the lion snake site. Perhaps the native earthworms are less likely to be found under cover objects, or perhaps these snakes simply have a different diet in Wisconsin than in the rest of their range. Example, other soft-bodied invertebrates are abundant at the Wisconsin lined snake site. Unfortunately, it's difficult to find support for either of the two hypotheses due to the lack of historical data on earthworms and the introduction of earthworms native to the southern United States, in addition to their European cousins to the upper Midwest. However, it is interesting to ponder how the introduction of these unassuming invertebrates might have altered the geographic ranges, abundances, and ecologies of the animals that feed on them. And that's Jeffrey Lorch's part of the chapter on the lion snake in Amphibians and Reptiles of Wisconsin. Jeff Lorch works at the National Wildlife Health Center in Madison, and I wanted you to know about this fascinating place. I know a few people who have worked there in the past and a few who work there today. When I was a wildlife rehabilitator, during one of our conferences, we toured the facility, and I'm happy to spread the word about the hard work they're doing on behalf of all of us. From Wikipedia, it says, "The National Wildlife Health Center in Madison is a science center of the United States Geological Survey located on a 24-acre plot of land that includes a main building and a tight isolation building. The facility houses biosafety level 3 and biosafety level 2 laboratories on site. The center studies several diseases that affect American wildlife, including white nose syndrome in bats, chronic wasting disease, avian influenza, and sylvatic plague, among others. In addition to the study of disease, the Wildlife Health Center has the capability to diagnose the causes of mass die-offs of wildlife. This is done via necropsy and the work of several pathologists, biologists, and other scientists. The scientists are able to run toxicology, heavy metal, and tissue analysis to determine cause of death. A notable instance of this capability in use was during the mass die-off of birds, primarily red-winged blackbirds, in Beebe, Arkansas. On December 31, 2010, the Wildlife Health Center determined the die-off to be the result of blunt trauma, most likely caused when the birds were frightened out of their roost trees at night by fireworks." And that's the wiki selection. I'm pleased to note that they also have a beautiful prairie that the employees maintain and also have a large array of solar panels. I wish that all facilities and businesses had those things. And they're planning a new building at the Wildlife Health Center. Their roof will be completely covered with solar panels. I hope I've piqued your interest in this new book. We have a local hero involved with its publication, Amphibians and Reptiles of Wisconsin. It's edited by Kapfer, K-A-P-F-E-R, and Brown, published in 2022 by the University of Wisconsin Press. What a great work it is. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.